1 year and 15 days. According to one newspaper report, as the thief was led out of the courtroom in handcuffs, he was overheard saying,
"It could have been worse."
6 weeks later, the defense lawyers appealed his sentence. During those weeks, the political climate in Europe had changed dramatically. Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated in Sarajevo, and on the 28th of July, Austro-Hungary declared war on Serbia. The first salvo of the First World War. On his release, Perugia joined the Italian army, serving honourably through the war. And in 1921, he married, moved back to France, and opened a paint shop in Haute-Savoie. Vincenzo Perugia, also known as Leonardo, served less than a year for pulling off the most audacious art heist in history. He never confessed who was behind the pinch felt round the world, but the idea that he was the lone thief seems implausible. The First World War swept the Mona Lisa caper off the front pages, but the story begged for more. Years later, a journalist for the New York Journal provided it.
Part 4 of The Lost Mona Lisa by R.A. Scotti was read by Nicholas Grace and produced by Duncan Minchell. In tomorrow's final reading, Vincenzo Perugia is arrested and the painting is returned to France. End of story? Not exactly.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, this is Jim Lee at 3 o'clock, where the 60-minute drama today boasts a star-studded cast. On the way, scandalous revelations and a missing pig. Matt Lucas and Charles Dance star in the final part of Summer Lightning. Then as Tom discovers more about the secret garden in Tom's Midnight Garden, the 4 o'clock show delves into the history of the much-maligned garden gnome. And later, the detective monk Cadvar returns from the Crusades in A Light on the Road to Woodstock at 8:30. But first, will a whole host of dilemmas be happily resolved, restoring peace and harmony to Blanding's castle?
Summer Lightning by P.G. Woodhouse, starring Patricia Hodge, Charles Dance, Tim Pigott-Smith, Samuel West, Rachel Sterling, Jared Harris, Martin Jarvis and Matt Lucas, with Matthew Wolfe as Ronnie Fish and Lisa Dillon as Sue Brown. Ian Ogilvie is the voice of P.G. Woodhouse.
Beach posed himself in the doorway of Blanding's castle, looking, as he always did on these occasions, like the spirit of Blanding's welcoming the lucky guest.
Leave the door open, Beach. I think the smell of the wet earth and the flowers is so refreshing, don't you?
The butler did not. He was not one of your fresh air men. He cast an appraising eye on the girl who had just arrived with Lady Constance, and found her, even by his own exacting standards of criticism, noticeably attractive.
I knew the shower wouldn't last long, Miss Schoonmaker.
No. I mean, no.
You must be wanting some tea after your journey.
Oh, yes.
It seemed to Sue Brown as if she'd been smiling brightly for centuries. The moment she'd alighted from the train and found her formidable hostess and this strangely sinister Mr. Baxter waiting to meet her, she'd begun to smile brightly and had been doing it ever since.
The rain has stopped, Mr. Baxter. You must show Miss Schoonmaker the rose garden before tea.
I shall be delighted, Miss Schoonmaker.
A momentary panic gripped Sue. She feared that already this man had probed her secret, that she was not Myra Schoonmaker, merely Sue Brown, chorus girl, on a mission to make her darling Ronnie realise that she loved only him. In Baxter's glance, it seemed to her, there shone suspicion. Such, however, was not the case. Rupert Baxter's glance was almost, in fact, a loving glance. The good looks which he saw, and the wealth which he had been told about, were undeniably beginning to fan the hidden fire.
Well, how nice and old everything is here. What is that funny-looking gargoyle thing over there?
That is my brother Galahad.
Oh, no, I meant...
Galahad, this is Miss Myra Schoonmaker.
Really? Is it? Good Lord.
How do you do?
How are you, my dear? I know your father intimately.
Oh.
Haven't seen him lately, of course. Must be 25 years since we met.
I wasn't born then.
And here's my niece, Millicent. My dear, this is Miss Schumacher.
Hello there.
Oh, hello. You're Ronnie's friend. The Miss Schumacher Ronnie met at Biarritz.
That's correct. How do you do?
But I'm sure Ronnie told me that you were very tall.
I suppose almost anyone seems tall to that boy. What?
Sure.
Millicent, have you seen Ronald anywhere?
Not since lunch. I suppose he's out in the ground somewhere.
Miss Schumacher, Ronald will be surprised to find you here. Your telegram did not arrive till after lunch, so he does not know that you were planning to come today. And now Mr. Baxter is going to show Miss Schumacher the rose garden.
Oh, I...
No, he isn't. I am. Old Johnny Schumacher's little girl. Great fellow, old Johnny. Why, there are 100 things I want to discuss. Now, come along, my dear. Sun's coming out already. Well, quite a short tour, really. Just roses and, roses. You get the idea. I saw you needed rescuing from that Baxter fellow. Look, I'll escort you back to the terrace. Come along. I'm expecting a man to call to see me about a play. This book of my reminiscences is going to make a stir, you see. And he thinks that if he can get me to put my name to the play... Ah, but Clarence!
Eh? What?
Over here.
How do you do?
Clarence will look after you.
Of course. Ronnie's uncle.
Mm. Clarence, this is Miss Schumacher.
Lord Emsworth.
Oh, yes, to be sure.
Now, take her about and show her things. I wouldn't go too far from the house, though. There may be a storm coming up.
Exactly. Precisely. You fond of pigs, Miss Schumacher?
Oh, yes. Very.
I'm afraid mine has been stolen.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. But I now have strong hopes that she may be recovered. A detective, you see. A trained mind is everything, eh, Galahad? Mm. Here. What I always say... God bless my soul.
What the blazes?
Good heavens, it's Baxter. I say, Baxter, what are you doing jumping out of windows? What on earth?
Baxter!
I slipped. I didn't jump.
Oh, no.
Slipped? How? Where?
I was leaning out of the library window and I lost my balance. Phew. Hello. I think I'll go indoors and wash my hands.
And face.
Mad as a coot.
Madder, I'd say. And if you take my advice, you'll hide the flower pots. Miss Schumacher, one of the things this fellow Baxter does when he gets these attacks is to hurl flower pots at people.
I beg your pardon, sir, but...
What's the matter, Beach? You look as if you're pacing behind the coffin of an old friend.
The gentleman is...
Oh, right. I'll see you in a minute, my dear. Look after Miss Schumacher, Clarence. Shan't be long.
I think you know my nephew Ronald.
Yes.
The boy's an ass.
Oh, why?
Well, hereditary, probably. His father was the biggest fool in the Brigade of Guards. The boy bounces tennis balls on pigs.
What?
I saw him with my own eyes. He bounced a tennis ball on Empress of Blandings. Not once, but repeatedly. Aggravating boy.
My lord.
Hello, Beach. Yes, what's this?
A card, your lordship. The gentleman is in the hall.
Oh, you'll excuse me, my dear. It's most important I should see this fellow immediately. You don't mind, miss? I'm obliged.
Not at all.
And for you, miss, this letter.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, miss.
From Ronnie? Oh, no. From R.J. Baxter. Dear Miss Schumacher, I feel that I must give you an explanation of the incident which occurred in the garden a short while ago. From the observation which Lord Emsworth
let fall in my hearing, I fear you may have placed a wrong construction on what took place. I allude to the expression, mad as a coot, which I distinctly heard Lord Emsworth utter as I moved away. The facts were precisely as I stated. I was leaning out of the library window, I lost my balance and fell. That I was entitled to expect sympathy, I overlook. But the words, mad as a coot, I resent extremely. I feel, therefore, that in justice to myself, I must tell you that Lord Emsworth is a man to whose utterances no attention should be paid. He is, to all intents and purposes, half-witted. His relatives look on him as virtually an imbecile and have, in my opinion, every cause to do so. In these circumstances, I think I may rely on you to attach no importance to his remarks this afternoon. Yours sincerely, R.J. Baxter. P.S. You will, of course, treat this
as entirely confidential. P.P.S. If you are fond of chess and would care for a game after dinner, I am a good player.
P.P.P.S. Or Bezique.
Bezique?
All alone, Miss Schumacher?
Oh!
You know, it's been a great treat to me meeting you, my dear. Your father and I correspond pretty regularly. He tells me all the news. Did you leave your family well?
Quite well.
And how was your Aunt Edna?
Fine.
Then your father must have been mistaken when he told me she was dead. But perhaps you thought I meant your Aunt Edith.
Oh, yes.
Pretty active?
Oh, yes.
When did you see her last?
Oh, just before I sailed.
And you say she's active?
Mm-hmm.
Curious. I heard 2 years ago that she was paralysed. I suppose you mean active for a paralytic. Confide in me, Miss Brown. What's the game? Miss Brown, up there is the small library where I work. I was looking out of the window a short while back when you were down here talking to my brother Clarence. There was a fellow with me. He looked out too. Theatrical manager fellow named Mason. We saw you and he said, "Why, there's Sue." I said, "Sue who?" "Sue Brown," said this fellow Mason. He said you were one of the girls at his theatre. He didn't seem particularly surprised to see you here. He said he took it that everything had been fixed up, and he was glad because you were one of the best. He wanted to come and have a chat with you, but I headed him off. I thought you might prefer to talk over this little matter alone with me. So, Miss Brown.
I can't explain. It's so complicated.
We have the evening before us. To begin with, what did Mason mean by saying that everything was fixed up?
I had told him about Ronnie.
Ronnie? My nephew, Ronald?
Yes, and seeing me here, he naturally took it for granted that Lord Emsworth and the rest of you had consented to the engagement and invited me to the castle.
You're engaged to Ronald? Good God.
I was.
But you broke it off.
He broke it off. I thought that if I could get down to Blandings, I could see him and explain and put everything right. And in London, Ronnie had introduced me to Lady Constance as Miss Schoonmaker. So, well, I came.
I never heard anything so dash sporting in my life.
You mean you won't give me away?
Of course I won't. What do you take me for?
I think you're an angel.
What I can't make out is why you want to marry my nephew Ronald.
I love him, bless his heart.
Well, think it over carefully. You're a very exceptional girl. What did you and that young poop quarrel about?
He found me dancing.
What's wrong with that?
I promised I wouldn't.
Well, if you can't smooth a little thing like that over, go and sob on the boy's waistcoat. How are you as a sobber?
Not very good, I'm afraid. If I can just find him and get an opportunity to talk to him...
You'll have to be quick about it, my dear. Suppose old Johnny Schoonmacker's girl really turns up. She said she was going to.
Yes, but I made Ronnie send her a telegram signed with Lady Constance's name saying that there was scarlet fever at the castle and she wasn't to come.
That's the finest thing I've ever heard. A girl like you is what this family's been needing for years. Oh, here's Clarence. Better put on that charming accent again. And who's this fellow with the Marcel waves?
Oh, Galahad. Mr. Pilby, this is Miss...
Schoonmacker.
Hmm?
Cool.
Beg your pardon, what did you say, my dear fellow? Galahad, this is Mr. Pilbeam of the Argus Inquiry Agency. Remember, he's come to track down my pig. That's my brother Galahad.
Pilbeam? Were you ever connected with a paper called Society Spites, Mr. Pilbeam?
Never. Certainly not, no.
Fellow of your name used to edit it.
Your relation, perhaps. Distant.
Well, I'm sorry you're not the man. I've been wanting to meet him. He wrote a very offensive thing about me once.
I wonder, Mr. Pilbeam, if you'd like to see some photographs.
Aye?
Yeah, of the Empress. They'll give you some idea of what a magnificent animal you're looking for. I'll stimulate you. Yeah. I'll go up to the library and get them out.
You doing anything after dinner, my dear?
There was some talk of a game of bezique with Mr. Baxter.
Baxter? Don't dream of it. I was thinking that if I hadn't got to go out to dinner, I'd like to read you some of my book. I think you'd appreciate it. I tell you what, I'll give you the thing to read. Which is your room?
The garden room, I think it's called.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll bring the manuscript to you before I leave. Pip, pip, for now.
Well?
Oh, so it is you, with an accent. What on earth are you doing here?
If you must know, I came here to see Ronnie and to try to explain about that night at Mario's.
What was that name the old boy called you?
Schoonmacker.
Why did he call you that?
Because that's who he thinks I am.
You mean to say you're here pretending to be somebody else?
Yes.
That Galahad fellow seems to look on you as a daughter or something.
We are great friends.
And he's going to give you his book to read?
Yes.
Well, this is where you and I get together.
What do you mean?
You'll admit that I could give you away and spoil whatever game it is you're up to.
Well?
But I'm not going to, if you'll be sensible.
So?
Listen, I want your help. Old Emsworth thinks I've come down here to find his stolen pig, but I haven't. I've come to get that book your friend Galahad is writing.
What?
I thought you'd be surprised. There's a man living near here who's scared stiff. There's going to be a lot of stories about him in that book. And he's offered me £100 to snitch the manuscript. And now the old buster is going to give you the thing to read. All you have to do is hand it over to me, and there's £50 for you for doing practically nothing.
And if I don't, I suppose you will tell them who I really am?
Yes, you got it.
Well, I'm not doing anything of the kind. And if you want to tell these people who I am, go ahead and tell them.
All right, I will.
Do, but just bear in mind that I shall tell Mr. Threepwood that it was you who wrote that thing about him in Society Spice.
Now look.
Pelby, my dear fellow, will it come up? I found the photograph.
Oh, rightio, Lord Emsworth. Thank you.
Hello. Hello, Miss Schoonmacker.
Oh, hello.
Who's that?
A man named... A guy named Pilbeam.
Pill, I should say, is right. Weird hair. Ever read Schopenhauer?
Nope.
Oh, you should. Great stuff. Schopenhauer says that life's a mixture of suffering and boredom. His stuff is full of snappy cracks like that. You'd enjoy it. I'm going for a walk. You coming?
I don't think I will, thanks.
Schopenhauer says suicide's absolutely okay. He says Hindus do it instead of going to church. They bung themselves into the Ganges and get eaten by crocodiles and call it a well-spent day. I'm going down by the lake. Sure, you won't come.
No, thanks. Really, I think I'll go in.
Just as you like. Liberty Hall. Sorry if I seem gloomy. Something on my mind. The fact is, I've just got engaged to be married to my cousin Ronnie.
What? Ronnie?
Yes, we fixed it up just now. Bye.
But what? Oh.
I say, Sue, did she tell you?
Yes.
She's engaged?
Yes.
She's going to marry Ronnie?
Yes.
Death, where is thy sting? Grave, thy victory?
Rupert Baxter had written his note in the morning room, immediately upon his return to the house, and had delivered it into Beach's charge with hands still stained with garden mould. Only then did he start to go upstairs in quest of the wash and brush-up which he so greatly needed. He had reached the first floor when his progress was arrested by what, in a lesser woman, would have been a yelp.
Mr. Baxter, come in here.
May I? I am a trifle dishevelled. Thank you, Lady Constance.
What have you been doing, Mr. Baxter?
Jumping out of a window.
Jumping out of a window?
In the course of my seeking Mr. Galahad's reminiscences. I was just searching the desk when I heard the door handle beginning to turn. The window was at my elbow. I jumped out of it.
Oh, dear. I should have told you.
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Baxter, Sir Gregory Parslow said in his note that this detective, Pilbeam, who is coming here this evening, is acting for him. Apparently Sir Gregory has promised him a large sum of money if he will obtain possession of my brother Galahad's manuscript.
Oh!
That is why he has invited us to dinner tonight, to get Galahad out of the house. So you needn't to have troubled.
I needn't.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Baxter.
Pray do not mention it, Lady Constance, though I have bruised my left shin somewhat severely and, as you see, made myself rather dirty.
I'm so sorry.
Furthermore, I gathered from the remark he let fall that the impression my actions have made upon Lord Emsworth is that I am insane.
Oh, dear.
He even specified the precise degree of insanity. As mad as a coot, were his words. Still, the thing now is to think of some way of recovering the lost ground.
You mean if you could find the Empress?
Exactly.
Oh, Mr. Baxter, if only you could.
I can.
You can?
The first thing to do is to seek a motive. Who is there in Blandings Castle who could have had a motive for stealing Lord Emsworth's pig?
I wish I knew.
Carmody, Lady Constance.
Mr. Carmody?
Precisely. He is Lord Emsworth's secretary, and a most inefficient one. He sees me arrive at the castle, who formerly held the post.
he is alarmed. Then he has an idea. He thinks to himself that if he removes the pig and conceals it somewhere, and then pretends to have found it and restores it to its owner, Lord Emsworth's gratitude will be so intense that all danger of his dismissal will be at an end.
Oh, Mr. Baxter, you marvel.
I have no doubt that the pig is hidden somewhere in the grounds. But he would not have undertaken this single-handed. It would be necessary to feed the pig at regular intervals. He would require an accomplice. And I think I know who that accomplice is.
Who?
Beach.
Beach?
Have you observed Beach closely of late, Lady Constance? He has something on his mind. He is nervous. He jumps when you speak to him. Leave it to me. A few searching questions should force him to reveal the truth.
Well, let it rain. Let it thunder. What do I care? Engaged to Ronnie? Since you'll be married to Ronnie.
Not a bad place to be struck by lightning. All the same, getting dashed wet. Could be struck by lightning just as well in that cottage sort of place. All right. Go for the cottage.
Hugo! Hugo, darling, save me!
What? Millicent? Oh, righto. I say, what's going on?
Oh, Hugo, I went in there into that cottage to shelter from the rain, and it's all pitch dark.
Yeah, yeah, it's all right.
But it isn't. There's a man in there.
Man?
Yes. It was pitch dark, and I heard something move, and I said, who's that? And then he suddenly spoke to me in German.
In German?
Yes.
Right. I'm going in to have a look.
Hugo, stop! You'll be killed! Oh, Hugo. Hugo, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. I say, Millicent, do you know what? It's the pig.
It's what?
The pig.
Who's a pig?
Your friend in here. It's Empress of Blandings, as large as life. Come and have a look.
How on earth did she get here?
That's what I'm going to find out. What is this place, anyway?
It used to be a gamekeeper's cottage, I believe.
There seems to be a room up above. I'm going to go up there and wait. It's quite likely that somebody will be along to feed the animal, and I'm going to see who it is.
Yes! Yes, that's what we'll do. How clever of you.
No, not you. You get back home.
I won't.
Just as you like. Come on, then. Up these stairs. Oh, mice and mildew.
Oh, it's dark.
Now, we can wedge in here. On the floor. We should be able to look through these holes. All right? You know you've broken my belly heart.
Oh, Hugo.
I mean, look here, all this getting engaged to Ronnie.
I can't believe it really happened.
Well, how did it?
It just sort of did. I was feeling miserable and very angry with you. And I bumped into Ronnie and he took me for a stroll down by the lake and we started throwing little bits of stick at the swans. And suddenly Ronnie sort of said, will you marry me? And I said, all right. And he said, I ought to warn you, I despise all women. And I said, I loathe all men. And he said, right-ho, I think we shall be very happy.
I see.
I only did it to score off you.
You succeeded.
You never really loved me, or you wouldn't have gone sneaking off to London and stuffing that beastly girl of yours with food.
She isn't my girl. And she isn't beastly, actually.
She is.
Well, you seem to get on with her all right. I saw you chatting on the terrace together as cosy as dammit.
I don't know what you're talking about. What's Miss Schumacher got to do with it?
Look, Miss Schumacher isn't Miss Schumacher. She's Sue Brown.
Sue Brown? Oh, so she's followed you down here.
She hasn't followed me down here. She's followed Ronnie. Listen, Sue Brown has never cared a curse for me, nor me for her, except that she's nice to dance with. Then Ronnie found her talking to that pestilence Pillbeam and cut up rough and came down here. She wanted to get a word with him, so she came down too, pretending to be Miss Schumacher. And the moment she gets here, she finds Ronnie's engaged to you. A nice surprise.
But what is Pillbeam doing down here?
Pillbeam?
He was on the terrace talking to her.
Oh, Pillbeam? Here? So he came after all, did he? He's the detective fellow Lord Emsworth sent me to about the Empress. It was Pilbeam's minions that dogged my steps that night, at your request. Well, a bitter reckoning awaits that bloke.
You said Sue Brown wasn't pretty.
Listen, there's only one girl in the world that I call pretty, and she's going to marry Ronnie. If you haven't realised by this time that I love you, have never loved anybody else, and never shall, you're a fathead.
Oh, Hugo...
Millicent.
Shh. Someone with a lantern.
It's Beach!
Come on, let's go down.
Beach!
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, miss.
What's all this, Beach?
Well, sir...
You stole her, Beach. You?
Yes, miss. It was I who stole the animal.
I did it for your sake, miss.
Beach, this is pure apple sauce. What do you mean you stole the pig for her sake?
In order to remove the obstacles in your path, miss.
Obstacles?
Well, miss, I have long been cognizant of your desire to contract a union with Mr. Carmody, and I knew that there would be objections raised by certain members of the family.
So far, this sounds to me like drivel of the purest water. But go on.
Thank you, sir. And then it occurred to me that were his lordship's pig to disappear, his lordship would, on recovering the animal, be extremely grateful to whoever restored it. It was my intention to apprise you of the animal's whereabouts and suggest that you should inform his lordship that you had discovered it. In his gratitude, I fancied his lordship would consent to the union.
Oh, Beach!
Gosh, Beach!
Beach, you're an angel!
Thank you, miss.
I'll tell you what, Beach, you've got to leave your brain to the nation. Have it pickled and put in the British Museum. The old boy will be all over us.
He'll do anything for us.
Now, let me think this out. Right, I've got it. I say we should hold this pig for a rising market. The longer we wait, the more grateful Lord Emsworth will be. But no, don't forget, it's not merely a question of us getting your uncle's consent to our union. We've got to break it to him that you aren't going to marry Ronnie. Another 48 hours is essential.
Then we'll simply leave the Empress here?
No. If we found her here, anybody might. We require a new safe deposit. And I know the very one. It's...
No, if it's all the same to you, sir, I would much prefer not to hear it. I've been under a considerable mental strain of late, sir, and I really don't think I could bear any more of it. Besides, supposing I were questioned, sir, it may be my imagination, but I have rather fancied that Mr. Baxter harbours suspicions.
All right, Beach, fair enough. Come along, Millicent, we must be shifting.
Are you going to take the Empress away now, sir?
This very moment. I pass this handkerchief through the handy ring which you observe in the nose, and... Hey, presto, allez, up. Goodbye, Beach. It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done, I think. Come along, Empress. Well done, Beach.
Now, look here, Beach. I sent for you because Mr. Baxter here has made a remarkable charge against you. Most extraordinary.
What is it that Mr. Baxter says, Your Lordship?
Eh? Tell him, Baxter.
Thank you, Your Lordship. Well, Beach, I followed you to the gamekeeper's cottage in the West Wood this evening.
Sir?
You heard what I said?
Undoubtedly, sir, but I fancied I must be mistaken. I have not been to the spot you mentioned, sir.
I saw you with my own eyes.
I can only repeat my asseveration, sir.
But, Beach, Mr. Baxter says he peeped through the window and saw you feeding the Empress. In a nutshell, Mr. Baxter says it was you who stole the pig.
Might I speak frankly, Your Lordship?
Dash it, ma'am. We want you to speak frankly, is the whole idea. So I sent for you. You want a full confession, name of your accomplice, all that sort of thing.
I hesitate only because what I should like to say may possibly give offence to Mr. Baxter, Your Lordship.
Well, it doesn't matter. Say what you like.
Well, then, Your Lordship, I think it possible that Mr. Baxter, if he will pardon my saying so, may have been suffering from an hallucination.
You mean his potty?
Really, Lord Emsworth? Beach! Are you prepared to come with his lordship and me to the cottage now, at this very moment, and let his lordship see for himself?
No, sir.
Ha!
I should first wish to go downstairs and get my hat.
Oh, quite right. Very sensible. Might catch a nasty cold in the head. Yeah, certainly get your hat, Beach. Meet us at the front door.
Hello, Roddy. Not dressed. Gold will be going soon.
Oh, I don't want any dinner.
Oh. Looks as if I shall have to don the nose bag alone. And as for the pustule Pillbeam, I propose to interview him at the earliest possible date. After that, he won't want any dinner either.
Where are the rest of them?
Didn't you know? They're dining over at old Parslow's. Your aunt, Lord Emsworth, old Galahad, and, Millicent. I say, Ronnie, old man, while on the subject of Millicent...
Well?
You know that engagement of yours? It's off.
Off?
Right off. A washout. Millicent's changed her mind. She's going to marry me. I may tell you that we've been engaged for weeks, one of those secret betrothals, but we had a row. Brown, however, complete reconciliation. So she asked me to break it to you gently. She's returning you to store.
Well, that's the first bit of good news I've had for a long time.
You mean you didn't want to marry Millicent?
Of course I didn't.
In that case, why propose to her?
I should have thought it was obvious.
Oh, I see. You grabbed Millicent to score off Sue, and she grabbed you to score off me.
Ha!
And now I suppose you've fixed it up with Sue again. Couldn't have made a wiser move.
I haven't.
You haven't? Well, I think you're being very hard on her. And after what she's done...
I don't want to talk about her. Give me my jacket. I think I might get some dinner after all.
Hey, you! Pillbeam!
What? Oh, no, not you. Oh!
Pillbeam, come here, you excrescence!
I was just on my way downstairs, but...
No, you don't. Come out. Come out of that cupboard.
No, be reasonable.
Reasonable? Come out. I only want to pull your head off.
Look, I can explain everything about that night at Mario's, I mean. I tell you, Miss Brown had never set eyes on me before. She was dining with that fellow Carmody, and he went out, and I came over and introduced myself. I've got shares in the place. Why shouldn't the fellow say a friendly word?
I wish I'd got there earlier.
I should have been glad to see you.
I shall be glad to see you when I can get this damn door open.
Look here, if your name's Ronnie, you're the fellow she's come here to see. She told me so in the garden this evening.
What?
She's looking for you. She came here calling herself Miss Shoemaker or some such name just to see you.
What's that? Come out. I want to talk to you.
You are talking to me.
I don't want to bellow this through a door. Come on out. I swear I won't touch you.
All right. Too many mothballs in here anyway.
Right. Did you say she's here? At Blandings?
She's in the garden room. If you go there now, you might have a quiet word with her before dinner.
And she said she had come here to see me?
Yes, to explain about that night at Mario's. And what I say is, if a girl didn't love a fellow, would she come to a place like this, calling herself Miss Shawbread or something, simply to see him? I ask you.
Right-ho! The garden room!
Yes.
Oh, you can go down now. There's usually drinks in the drawing room first.
Thank you.
The expedition to the gamekeeper's cottage had not proved a pleasure trip for Rupert Baxter. The cottage was pigless.
Light and shade, do you see, my dear Baxter, that's all. In the darkness of a thunderstorm, anybody might have been deceived into supposing he'd seen a butler feeding a pig in here. Eh, Beach?
Indeed, your lordship.
Yes, probably a bit of wood, sticking out of the wall. You agree, Beach?
Highly likely, your lordship.
Mm. I should hurry back home, my dear fellow, have a nice cup of hot tea, skip dinner and go to bed. Eh, Beach?
An excellent suggestion, your lordship.
Yeah.
Rupert Baxter had returned to the house burning with baffled rage. He retired to the smoking room, while Beach was just in time to take up his evening duties. It has been well said that if butlers come, can cocktails be far behind?
Good evening, Mr. Pillbeam, sir. A cocktail before dinner, sir?
Oh, hello there. Thanks. Oh. Nice evening.
Yes, sir.
I got caught in the storm.
Indeed, sir.
Yeah.
Another cocktail?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Lord Emsworth has been showing me some photographs of that pig of his, and... By the way, in strict confidence, what's your name?
Beach, sir.
In strict confidence, Beach. I know something about that pig.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. Well, after I'd seen the photographs, I went for a walk in the park and the rain came on. I got pretty wet. In fact, I don't mind telling you, I had to get under cover and take my trousers off to dry. Oh, empty glass.
Another cocktail, sir?
Making three in all?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps you're right. Cheers. Oh, that hits the spot. I say, Beach, I've been waiting here hours and hours. Where is everybody?
His lordship and her ladyship and Mr. Galahad and Miss Threepwood are dining at Matchingham Hall.
What? With old Pop Parslow?
With Sir Gregory Parslow, yes.
Well, well, well. Quick worker, old Parslow. I mean, you advise him to adopt a certain course of action, he does it right away. Don't you think so, Beach?
Well, I fear my limited acquaintance with Sir Gregory scarcely entitles me to offer an opinion, sir.
Talking of old Parslow, Beach, I could tell you about something he's up to.
Indeed, sir?
But I'm not going to. Professional secret.
Yes, sir?
As you rightly say, yes. Any more of that stuff in the shaker, Beach?
A little, sir.
if you consider it judicious.
That's just what I do consider it. Start pouring. As a matter of fact, Beach, I could tell you something else. What's the name of that chap, the old boy's secretary?
Mr. Carmody, sir.
Carmody! What's the name? Cheers. Well, I could tell you something about Carmody that would interest you very much. I saw Carmody this afternoon when Carmody didn't see me.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. Where is Carmody?
I imagine he will be down shortly, sir. Mr. Ronald also.
Ah, Ronald. That's a tough baby, Beach. Do you know what he wanted to do just now? Murder me. You know why?
I could not say, sir.
Of course you couldn't. You don't know. Well, he's in love with a girl in the chorus named Sue Brown, and he thought I'd been taking her out to dinner. That's why he wanted to murder me, Beach.
Indeed, sir.
Now, what saved me, Beach?
No, sir.
Presence of mind. I put it to Ronnie that if this girl loved me, would she have come to this place pretending to be Miss Shoemaker simply so as to see him?
Sir? Miss...
Yes! That's who Miss Shoemaker is, Beach. She's a chorus girl called Sue Brown. She's come here to see Ronnie.
Indeed, sir.
Ah, Pillbeam. Leave us, Beach.
Sir?
Pop off, Beach.
Very good, sir.
I've been looking for you, Viper.
Have you, Cowdy? I've been looking for you too. Each looking for each. Well, come right in and sit down. Good old Carmody. Well, 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 well.
I don't know if you're aware of it, Worm, but you came jolly near to blighting my life.
Doing what, Carmody?
Listen, you insect. You set your foul spies on my trail after I left your office the other day. The result was that I came jolly close to having my bally life ruined. And now I'm going to haul you out of that chair and kick you hard and go on kicking you till I kick you out of the house. And if you dare to shove your beastly little nose back inside the place, I'll disembowel you.
Well, nothing could be fairer than that. Nevertheless, there's no reason why you should go about stealing pigs.
What?
Pig pincher!
Did you see me?
Oh, yes, I see you, Carmody people!
Did you see me put that pig in the caravan?
Yes, 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 yes. Certainly I saw you, Marmody. Why shouldn't I see you? Considering I'd been caught in the rain and taken shelter in a caravan and was in there with my trousers off trying to dry them because I'm subject to lumbago.
I didn't see you.
No, Carmody, you did not. And I'll tell you why. Because I heard a girl's voice outside saying, "Be quick! Or somebody will come along," and I hid. You don't suppose I would let a sweet girl see me in knee-length mesh-knit underwear, do you? Not done, Carcady. What, crickets?
I beg your pardon, sir, but do you propose to wait any longer for Mr. Ronald?
Certainly not. I want my dinner, and I want it now. Come along, Rowdy. Dindins.
I don't want any dinner.
The man's an ass.
Shall I bring you some sandwiches, sir?
No, thanks.
Ah! Sir. It is Mr. Pillbeam, sir. He appears to have fallen downstairs.
Has he broken his neck?
Apparently not, sir.
Ah.
Rupert Baxter was draining a glass of whiskey and soda in the smoking room. He felt a little better. Before, he would gladly have murdered Beach and danced on his grave. Now, he would have been satisfied with straight murder. Then, as the grateful glow of the whiskey began to make itself felt, a softer mood came to him.
Miss Myra Schoonmaker, heiress, the future Mrs. Baxter. Wedding bells.
Hello, yes?
Blandings Castle?
Yes?
Post Office, Market Blandings speaking. We got a telegram here for Lady Constance Keeble.
I will take it.
Right. Address to Lady Constance Keeble, Blandings Castle, Market Blandings, Shropshire, England. Handed in at Paris.
Right. Proceed.
Right. Terribly sorry here, news stop. Quite understand, stop. So disappointed she'll be unable come to you later as going back America at end of month, stop.
Mm-hmm.
do hope we shall be able to arrange something when I return next year, Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Regards, Stark. Signed, Myra Schoonmaker.
What? Signed what?
Myra Schoonmaker. Or maybe it's Macca.
Myra.
Do you wish the message repeated?
No.
Right, thank you. Good night.
Myra Schoonmaker? Telegraphing from Paris? Then who is this girl here? An imposter. And if I expose her, she'll revenge herself by showing Lord Emsworth my letter. Oh, my God. I must recover it at once. Otherwise, not even Lady Constance will be able to restore me to my lost secretaryship. Right! The letter must be somewhere in that girl's room.
A minute later, Baxter was in the room. The drawer of the dressing table suggested itself as a possibility. It stood so near to the open French windows that Baxter could see the balcony in its entirety. His heart seemed to sideslip. Leaning upon the parapet and looking out over the rhododendron fringe drive stood the girl.
Oh, no.
For an instant, he remained frozen. Then he started to tiptoe silently to the door. As the door handle turned, Rupert Baxter, even in this black hour efficient, dropped on all fours and slid under the bed as smoothly as if he'd been practicing for weeks.
Oh, good evening, miss. Your dinner is quite ready.
Oh, thank you.
Is there anything further I can do for you, miss?
No, thank you. Oh, yes. Would you mind fetching that manuscript from the balcony? I was reading it out there and I left it on the chair. It's Mr. Threepwood's book.
Indeed, miss. An exceedingly interesting compilation, I should imagine.
Yes, very.
I wonder if it would be taking a liberty, miss, to ask you to inform me later if I make any appearance in its pages.
You?
Yes, miss. From what Mr. Galahad has let fall from time to time, I fancy it was his intention to give me printed credit as his authority for certain of the stories which appear in the book.
Do you want to be in it?
Most decidedly, miss. I should consider it an honour, and it would please my mother.
Have you a mother?
Yes, miss. She lives at Eastbourne. I will fetch the manuscript, miss.
Sue!
Ronnie!
Sue, I'm so sorry. Forgive me, Sue. I'm a beast, a brute, a worm.
Hugo, why are you ringing me at Matchingham? What's up? We're just on the fish course.
Everything's up, Millicent. That blister pillbeam saw us delivering the wretched pig to its new abode.
Oh, golly!
I know.
All right. This is what we'll do. I'll go back to the dining room and tell Uncle Clarence you found the Empress in the caravan.
Found her? But Pilbeam saw us putting her there.
I know.
Well, what's our move when he says so?
Stout denial.
Stout denial? Oh, right, stout denial. Yes, I see. I'll tell Pilbeam that if he opens his mouth, I'll strangle him.
Right. Hold on, Hugo. I'll tell Uncle Clarence. I expect he'll want a word with you.
Half a minute. When am I supposed to have found this ghastly pig?
10 minutes ago, when you were taking a stroll before dinner, you happened to pass the caravan and you heard an odd noise inside. You looked to see what it was, and there was the Empress. And you raced back to the house to telephone.
But Millicent, wait. The old boy will think Baxter stole her.
Yes, isn't that splendid? Well, hold on.
Carmody!
Yes, Lord Emsworth?
Is this true? You found the Empress?
Yes, Lord Emsworth.
In that fellow Baxter's caravan?
Yes, Lord Emsworth.
Well, I'll be damned.
Lord Emsworth, there is something I would like to take this opportunity of saying. I love your niece, Millicent, and she loves me, and it is my hope that you will give your consent to our marriage. I'm not a rich man, Lord Emsworth, but my uncle Lester owns Rudge Hall in Worcestershire. I dare say you've heard of the place. Well, I shall eventually succeed to quite a fairish bit of the stuff. So what I mean is, it isn't as if I wasn't in a position to support Millicent later on. So what I'm driving at, if you follow me, is may we charge ahead? Hello? Hello? I say, are you there, Lord Emsworth? Hello?
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 I say, Hugo, things are hotting up here properly. I sprung it on Uncle Clarence just now that I want to marry you.
So did I. Only he wasn't there.
I said, Uncle Clarence, aren't you grateful to Mr. Carmody for finding the Empress? And he said, yes, 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 to be sure. Capital boy, always liked him. And I said, I suppose you wouldn't by any chance let me marry him. And he said, certainly, by all means. And then Aunt Constance had a fit, and Uncle Gally said she was a killjoy. I don't know what old Parslow thinks of it all. I'm going back to see how it's coming out. Hold the line.
Yes, of course.
What ho, Carmody!
So here you are, Carmody, on the telephone.
Pilbeam, I have something to say to you.
Yes, Carmody?
Do you want to be battered to a pulp?
No, Carmody.
Then listen, you didn't see me put that pig in the caravan. Not if you want to go on living.
Say no more, Carmody, I take your point. You want me not to tell anybody I saw you put that caravan in the pig. Now, I'm going for a stroll. Care to join me?
Go to hell.
Quite.
Hugo, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, Hugo, darling, the battle's over. We've won. Uncle Clarence has said certainly 65 times. It's a walkover. They're all coming back right away in the car. Uncle Clarence is an angel.
So are you.
Not such an angel as you are.
No, much more of an angel than I am.
Well, anyway, you precious old thing. I'm going to give them the slip and walk home along the road. Hugo, get out Ronnie's two-seater and come and pick me up, and we'll go for a drive through the country. It's the most perfect evening.
You bet it is. What I call something like an evening.
Rupert Baxter was writhing in silent anguish under the bed in Sue's room. Even up to this point, he'd not liked the dialogue. It now became perfectly nauseating.
Ronnie, darling, you're not a beast, a brute, and a worm.
I certainly am, Sue.
Well, I love you anyway.
You can't!
I do.
Your manuscript, miss.
Oh, hello, Beach, my dear old partner in crime.
Sir.
I suppose all this must seem tolerably rummy to you, Beach.
No, sir. I had already been informed, Mr. Ronald, of the nature of your feelings towards this lady.
Who told you?
Mr. Pilbeam, sir.
Ah. Beach, how much do you know?
All, sir.
All? Such as?
I am aware that this lady is a Miss Sue Brown, and according to my informant, she is employed in the chorus of one of London's theatres.
I want to marry Miss Brown, Beach.
I can readily appreciate such a desire on your part, Mr. Ronald.
Ronnie, he's all right. I believe he's a friend.
Of course he's a friend. Old Beach, one of my earliest and stoutest pals.
Thank you, sir.
Beach, the time has come to act. I've got to make myself solid with Uncle Clarence at once. Directly he gets back tonight, I shall go to him and tell him that the Empress of Blandings is in a gamekeeper's cottage in the West Wood. And then, while he's still weak, I shall spring on him the announcement of my engagement.
Unfortunately, Mr. Ronald, the animal is no longer in the cottage.
You've moved it?
Not I, sir. Mr. Carmody. By a most regrettable chance, Mr. Carmody found me feeding it this afternoon. He took it away and deposited it in some place of which I am not cognizant, sir.
But good heavens, he'll dish my whole scheme. Go at once and ask him where that pig is. Tell him it's vital.
Very good, sir.
I don't understand, Ronnie. Pigs?
Well, you see, Beach and I can't explain now. But if we don't get that pig back, we're in the soup.
Ronnie? What's that?
Hang on. It's coming from the balcony. What's going on?
Be careful, Ronnie.
It's that detective blighter Pilbeam. He's climbing up the waterspout. Well, I'm ready for him.
Good God, you see that?
Clarence, what is the matter?
There, slow down. Man, climbing the waterspout.
What? Where? I don't see him.
I see him, Clarence. He just got onto the balcony outside one of the bedrooms.
Well, clearly it's that fellow Baxter. Nobody else would climb up water spouts and disappear over balconies. Soon, no doubt, he'll come out again and throw himself to the ground. That's the sort of fellow he is. Mad as a coot.
Clarence, you're an idiot.
Come along, Galahad. We must apprehend him.
With you, Clarence.
Yeah! Oh, no!
What? Oh, bless my soul, it's Pilbeam. Where's he off to?
Here comes Roll. Both fleeing for the open spaces. Extraordinary.
Well, it's obviously Baxter running amok upstairs. Strong men run panic-stricken before him. I know what's needed. There we are. Follow me, Galahad.
Galahad? What's happening? Where's Clarence?
Well, Clarence has just gone upstairs with a gun.
Well, come along then. What are you waiting for? Tally-ho!
All right, Baxter. Where are you? Under the bed? Yeah, there you are. Now, you come out immediately. I have a shotgun. Stand back, Miss Schumacher.
All right. I'm coming out.
Yes, come along. Come along. I have you covered, my dear fellow. No. Slowly, does it?
Don't point that damned thing at me.
I shall point it at you. And at the slightest sign of violence...
Clarence, put that gun down.
Certainly not.
Clarence.
Oh, all right.
And now, Mr. Baxter, I'm sure you can explain.
Explain? The thing's obvious.
Is it? Fellow under the bed? Why?
Oh, my dear Galahad, think. That flower pot affair.
Oh, he's subject to these attacks, you mean?
Yeah, precisely.
Clarence, kindly stop talking in that offensive way about Mr. Baxter.
God bless my soul! You know yourself he isn't right in the head. Didn't he leap out of the window this very afternoon? Didn't he try to make me think that Beach...
Lord Emsworth?
Eh?
It has now come to my knowledge that Beach was not the prime mover in the theft of your pig, but I have ascertained that he was an accessory.
What?
He helped. The man who committed the actual theft was your nephew, Ronald.
Oh, there, Connie. Now perhaps you'll say he's not poddy. It won't do, Baxter, my dear fellow. You really mustn't excite yourself.
Oh, bad for the blood pressure.
The Empress was found this evening in your caravan, Baxter.
What?
In your caravan. Where you put her when you stole her. And bless my soul, I'm scared to see that she's put back in her sty.
In my caravan? And that's what that fellow Carmody did with the animal.
You'll be saying I stole her next, or Galahad here, or my sister Constance. Look, Baxter, my dear fellow, we aren't blaming you. We quite see how it is.
Clarence, whoever stole your wretched pig, and wherever it has been found, it was certainly not Mr. Baxter. Do ask yourself, Clarence, and try to answer the question as reasonably as is possible for a man of your mental calibre. What earthly motive would Mr. Baxter have for coming to Blandings Castle and stealing pigs?
What earthly motive does Mr. Baxter have for anything he does?
Yes, Connie, what motive had he for coming to Blandings Castle and scaring girls stiff by hiding under beds?
Mr. Baxter?
I will explain.
I knew you would have an explanation.
I have. A very simple one.
And short, I hope. The one that got him a pig.
Quite short. I came to this room to recover a letter which I had written to this lady, who calls herself Miss Schoonmaker.
Well, of course she calls herself Miss Schoonmaker. It's her name, my dear fellow. If a girl's name is Schoonmaker, naturally she calls herself Miss Schoonmaker. What?
Yes, if it is. But hers is not. It is Brown, Sue Brown. She is a chorus girl. And she is apparently engaged to be married to your nephew, Ronald.
What?
I overheard Beach saying so in this very room while I was under the bed. But in any case, whoever she is an impostor. A telegram came through from Market Blandings. It was signed Myra Schoonmaker and it had been handed in at Paris this afternoon. That is all I have to say. I will now leave you and I sincerely hope that I shall never set eyes on any of you again. Good evening.
Look out! Clumsy idiot, can't you look where you're going?
Miss Brown.
Ronnie.
What's all this?
Ronald, is this girl's name Brown? And is she a chorus girl?
Eh? Why, yes. As a matter of fact, that's right. I've been meaning to tell you about that. We're engaged.
Engaged? Clarence?
No. Eh?
You heard?
Heard what?
Ronald has just announced his intention of marrying a chorus girl.
Oh. I say, do you think Baxter fed the Empress regularly?
Your nephew Ronald has announced his intention of marrying Miss Brown, a chorus girl. This is Miss Brown.
Well, how do you do?
Ah, but she isn't an ordinary chorus girl. Sue's father was in the Guards.
A private? Or a corporal?
Captain. A fellow named...
Cotterley.
Cotterley.
Cotterley? Not Jack Cotterley? My dear, was your mother Dolly Henderson who used to dance at the old Oxford and the Tivoli?
Yes, she was.
Well, I'm dashed. And I've been trying to think all this while who it was that you reminded me of. My dear girl, do you know that I was once madly in love with your mother? And if my infernal family hadn't shipped me off to South Africa, I would certainly have married her. And when I came back, I found that young Cotterley had cut me out. Well...
Never mind about that now, Galahad. The point is...
No, the point is that young Fish there wants to marry Dolly Henderson's daughter. And I'm for it. And I hope, Clarence, that you'll have some sense for once in your life and back them up like a sportsman.
Yeah, I really ought to.
You see for yourself what a splendid girl she is.
You're charming.
Clarence, think what Julia would say.
Well, you think his mother wouldn't like it?
Of course Julia would not like it.
Julia's an ass.
True. But in that case, I'm obliged to. I'm going down to look at my pig.
Clarence, you are not going to consent to this marriage. Clarence!
Well, shame to inflict these fine old English family rows on a visitor. What you need, my dear, is a little rest and quiet. Cheer up. Now, come along, Ronnie, my boy. I want a word. I've seen stickier things than this come out right in my time.
Ronnie?
Only
only me, I'm afraid, my dear. May I come onto your balcony?
Oh. God bless my soul, as Clarence will say. What a wonderful night. Though I bet you don't think so. I know I didn't that night when my old father put his foot down and told me I was leaving for South Africa on the next boat. Just such a night as this it was, I remember. I never saw your mother after she was married. She left the stage and, well, I was rather busy at the time. A lot of heavy drinking to do and so forth. Somehow we never met. The next thing I heard, 2 or 3 years ago, was that she was dead. You're very like her, my dear. Can't think why I didn't spot the resemblance right away.
Gally.
Corncrake. That means more rain. Or not. I forget which. Did you ever hear your mother sing that song? No, you wouldn't, before your time. Look, about young Ronald.
What about him?
Fond of him?
Yes.
I mean, really fond?
Yes.
How fond?
I can't put it into words. Gally, did you see something move down there?
At the foot of the wall beneath the balcony, Percy Pilbeam, who'd been peering out of a bush, popped his head back again. £1,000 is a lot of money, and he was not going to be deterred from attempting to earn it. His intention was to lurk in the bushes till the small hours, if need be, and then attack the waterspout again, and so to the garden room where the manuscript of the On Galahad's reminiscences lay.
Just a rabbit. Go on, my dear. Put it into words.
Well, you look on Ronnie as something ordinary.
If that.
Yes, if that. Whereas to me, he's something rather special. In fact, if you really want to know, he's the whole world to me. There. You can laugh if you like.
No, I'm not laughing, my dear. I only wanted to find out if you really cared for him because...
Well?
Because I've just fixed it all up.
What?
Oh, yes. It's all settled. The wedding bells will ring out. Now, Ronnie's in the garden somewhere. You'd better go and find him and tell him the news.
But how? What has happened?
Well, you'll admit I might have married your mother.
Yes.
Which makes me a sort of honorary father to you.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, my dear, I put it to Connie squarely. I said if you come round, you can talk Julia over in 5 minutes. And then I said that if she gave up acting like a barbed wire entanglement in the path of true love, I would undertake not to publish the reminiscences.
Oh, no.
Percy Pilbeam had heard all. It was as if Sir Gregory Parslow's £1,000 had fluttered from his grasp like a vanishing bluebird.
Oh, Gally. Oh.
Oh, now come, nothing so very extraordinary in that, was there? One pal helping another.
I don't know what to say.
Well, then don't say it. Why, bless you, I don't care whether the damn things are published or not. Besides, I'll leave the dashed book to the Nation and have it published in 100 years and become the peeps of the future. Best thing that could have happened. It's a shame, though, that the world will have to wait 100 years before it hears about young Gregory Parslow and the prawns. Did you get to that when you were reading the thing this evening?
I'm afraid I didn't read very much. I was thinking of Ronnie rather a lot.
Oh. Well, I can tell you. You needn't wait 100 years. It all began when...
Percy Pilbeam did not linger. The story of the prawns meant nothing to him. He turned away, and the summer night swallowed him. Somewhere in the darkness, an owl hooted. It seemed to Pilbeam there was derision in the sound. If he could have found it, he would have had a word with that owl.
It was at Ascot, actually, my dear, the year Martingale won the Gold Cup. Now, it happened like this. You see, young Parslow...
In the second and final part of Summer Lightning by P.G. Woodhouse, Lisa Dillon played Sue Brown and Charles Dance played Gally, with Matthew Wolfe as Ronnie Fish. Beach was played by Tim Pickett-Smith, Lord Emsworth by Martin Jarvis, and Lady Constance by Patricia Hodge. Percy Pilbeam was played by Matt Lucas, Millicent by Rachel Sterling, and Hugo by Samuel West. Jared Harris was Rupert Baxter, and the post office lady was played by Joanna David. Ian Ogilvy was the voice of Woodhouse. Summer Lightning was dramatised by Archie Scottney, directed by Martin Jarvis, and is a Jarvis and Ayres production for BBC Radio 4.
Well, tomorrow's 60-minute drama is Maya Farm by Bruce Bedford, whom you may remember is the writer of a Seventh Dimension favourite, The Gibson. Back in 2009, we broadcast a bite-sized episode of a radio drama and then left it up to our listeners to tell us what should happen next. You didn't let us down. 3 months later, you'd made a tale with more twists and turns than Spaghetti Junction, and possibly just as easy to get lost in. You can hear that story, which incidentally picked up a BBC Innovation Award and a Radio Academy Silver Award too, here on BBC Radio 4 Extra over 3 nights starting next Wednesday. That's October the 2nd. And following that, we're going to start all over again with a new story. That's Chain Gang. Tune in, have a look at our website, and get set to steer us in the right direction.
Say that Manus, the old chieftain of this place, had some great treasure.
How did he come to lose it?
Nobody knows. Or if they did once, they aren't telling.
A Scottish island haunted by secrets.
What are we to do, Grizzle?
Why do you ask me?
Because you are a woman of great contrivance.
A history of love and betrayal.
You are free to roam the island as far as you wish. There is no way to leave it, so you should have no hopes of escape.
The Curiosity Cabinet on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
How can I bear it?
Come back from the edge at least.
Starts on Wednesday at 11:15 in the morning and again in the evening at 9:15.
It's the 4 o'clock show with Mel next, and after that it's the Tea Time Comedy Hour with Bally Lennon and Martin Clunes in The Older Woman. Join me for those at 5 if you can.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, kettle on, feet up, phones away. Come on, in fact, go on. Airplane mode, go on, go for it, just do it. Come on. Right, this is the 4 o'clock show. I'm Mel Gedroych. Now, coming your way over the next hour, we'll get that old grey matter working as comedian and showbiz friend Fred McCauley brings two teams together as they go head-to-head in our brain-busting quiz, Keep It In The Family. And we'll catch up with the next chapter in our story, Philippa Pierce's wonderful classic tale, Tom's Midnight Garden. Today, Tom's new friend Hattie nearly gives the game away.
Tom stuck his tongue out at them. In retort, the girl, Hattie, darted out her tongue at Tom. For a moment, Tom was so astounded that he almost believed he'd imagined it. But he knew he had not. She could see him. What did you stick your tongue out for, Hattie?
And as we get stuck in a time warp of our own in our midnight garden, we'll hear from one of England's classic watchmakers.
Very labour-intensive, very individual. And what the client is getting is a bespoke one-off wristwatch.
Plus, as if all that wasn't enough, you know what I'm about to announce now. Come on, team. We're off on my magical mystery tour. Our story this week focuses on the mysterious garden that appears to Tom when the clock strikes 13. And so there's been a bit of a horticultural edge to our secret destinations this week. Today's tour will take us to a London borough, south of the River Thames, and home to its very own secret garden. That's all I'm going to give you for now. Keep thinking, and I'll throw a few more clues your way later on. First, though, being a Thursday, it's time to probe into the unknown with some questions. Tom, the main character in our story, has stumbled upon a secret garden at his aunt's house, one that only opens when the clock strikes 13. The garden sounds gorgeous. Trees, hedges, big lawns, flower beds. But when it comes to gardens, there are few things as divisive as the old garden gnome. Some people love them and have literally hundreds of the little badgers scattered around their ponds, rockeries and flower beds. Others hate them. And then there are the stories of garden gnomes disappearing, only to write back to their owners with tales of adventures from foreign lands. Emily Williams begins her investigation into the world of garden gnomes with this story of one gnome's travels.
This August, Gloucester grandmother Eve Stewart Kelso got a surprise.
7 months before, her garden gnome, Murphy, had been stolen. Now he was back, with a photo album and an interesting letter.
Hello. First of all, I feel I should explain my prolonged absence. While surveying your garden one summer morning, I began to get itchy feet.
Eve was stunned. Her £8 gnome had apparently had enough of the daily grind that suburbia.
My travels have taken me across 3 continents, 12 countries, and more time zones than I can possibly remember.
And to prove the point, there were photos of Murphy in far-flung exotic locations. And in the last 10 years, it's a joke that's run and run and run.
Now, a group of kidnap victims in France are recovering after being released from captivity. Our correspondent Carolyn Wyatt has been following this case and she joins me now on the line.
One person who takes gnomes seriously is Anne Atkins. For the last 30 years, she's been running the Gnome Reserve in West Putford, Devon.
What have we got here, Anne?
A little cottage with a crooked chimney and, you know, and playing a... Well, I think they're gambling in there, actually. Husband's a cognitive therapist and he took me on this little inner journey thing and I came across these gnomes and I thought they wanted sharing with people and it just took off, you know? We just do it. It's a way of life.
And how many gnomes have you got here now?
Something like 2010.
That's a lot of gnomes.
It's powerful stuff, according to Anne, who likes to wear an orange gnome hat when strolling through the collection. That's her only rule, the gnome hat. I also had to wear one.